Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Thursday, March 20th, 2014. Wendy Wilson will be joining us for the first segment of the program. Let's get right to the precious metals today. We're looking at gold today, down $2.40 at $13.29. We have silver down 33 at 20.38. We have platinum down 14 as a down day, 14.36. Palladium was the shining metal of the day, up 9 at $774. The USDX today is trading up 0.22 at 80.21. And crude oil was down about $1.99. Paper markets today, they loved the day. I'm not quite sure why. I guess they're still feeling good with Janet Yellen. The Dow was up 108 points at 16,330. The NASDAQ was up 11 at 43.19, and the S&P up also 11 at 18.72, with the 10-year yield coming in 2.78% on the 10-year yield. So stocks are recovering. Everybody's happy. And are we happy, Alfred, today?
No, I'm not happy.
No.
I'm kind of So everybody better watch their step because I'm feeling a little grumpy today. Actually, I think what's going on, and we'll talk about this later on in the program, Obama has said that he's not going to engage in any military activity relative to Russia and the Ukraine. The Ukrainian government is evacuating 25,000 soldiers out of the Crimea. It means they've given up on it. It means that this thing is basically over, and I suppose that's what's happening in the stock market. There'll be still some bumps along the road. It's possible that Crimea will try to make some, make a little bit of trouble before this is done. And even if the Crimean government makes peace with Russia and that we don't go to a shooting war, there's still a possibility that people in the Crimea acting as guerrilla soldiers may attack the pipelines that are connecting Russia and headed off to the European Union. It may be they try to interfere with that. So this thing isn't absolutely over, but between the governments, I think this is a done deal.
Well, I think so too, and I think the markets have already gone past that, and I think you're seeing again a little bit of war premium coming out of gold and silver. But I think people will start focusing on the markets and realize the markets haven't changed, the economy hasn't changed, and I don't believe the weather is the single devastating factor to the poor reports that are coming out for January and February. So I think
how can
that'll
it be unseasonably cold in the wintertime. If we have global warming,
well, we certainly did see, you know, some temperatures that have been, you know, very cold in the northern parts of the states. We've seen it dip down, certainly in areas to the south. You know, we have Atlanta, and but again, we had this in varying degrees every winter, so that it shouldn't have that much of a change. But anyway, we'll be talking about that a little bit later on the program. Right now, we have Wendy Wilson joining us from the Apothecary Herbs, and we'll have to see what she's bringing us this afternoon in keeping everyone healthy. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Good afternoon, Al. Happy spring. It's officially spring. Do you feel it yet?
Really?
Spring is sprung. Is that what it is?
Oh, yeah. I'm all ready. I am ready for the birds to be chirping and the lawnmowers to be humming. I'm ready.
All right. Well, I see that you want to talk about utopia today.
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. I used to live
in utopia. Did you know that I lived in utopia for a while?
Did not know that.
No. Uh-huh. Utopia, Texas, little town, about 150 people.
Oh.
Down around San Antonio. Really is a nice little place. In fact, they made a movie, 7 Days in Utopia, just lately. Is that what we're going to talk about? Are we going to talk about the movie? Are we going to talk about the town? Or what are we going to talk about relative to utopia?
Well, we're just going to talk about the concept of utopia. Actually, powerful people, Al, Melanie, down through the centuries have tried to create their own utopias. And actually, the term utopia became popular in the 16th century when it appeared in the book called Utopia in 1516. It was written by Sir Thomas More. And in Moore's book, he presented this fictional island society in the Atlantic Ocean. But a popular definition of utopia is basically a society where, you know, political and social and moral aspects of life are ideally perfect. And basically, isn't that kind of the marketing angle behind the Obama administration? Because everywhere we turn, we hear about political and social and moral reform. So these ideals may sound worthy to the masses, but they really are political schemes in order to usher in more control over society. And in reality, it's not really called utopia when that happens. It's more accurately called kekotopia, which describes the worst possible conditions that exist in law, government, and society. And then it's just a hop, skip, and a jump over to what is called dystopia, where people are experience deprivation, oppression, and terror. So we wanted to check out these origins of utopia, also known as paradise, to see how that's being rolled out and how that's going to implement our health here. Well, if you look at the origins of utopia, Al, Melody, it comes from a Greek word called otopaz. It's O-U-T-O-P-A-S, but when you define that, it really means no place. So where did we get the idea that this fantasy place called utopia was a perfect society or paradise? Do you happen to know, Al?
I think it was Plato. I'm not sure, but I think Plato, actually, Plato, Socrates, one of them, were describing, uh-huh. they used the term no place. It means meaning that they were talking about an ideal, a fictional place, but it did not actually exist.
Well, you're close. We're going to get to that. But actually, the English term is eutopia. It's eutopaz, and it comes from the Greek, but it means good place. But these two terms were pronounced the same, and this is how they got confused in the meaning. But you are right about Pluto. In 380 BC, Pluto wrote the Greek text called The Republic, in which he described order, justice, and moral character of the state and of men, and he offered a philosophical and political structure, and his structure had different levels of socioeconomic classes, which he called the gold, silver, bronze, and iron. And the folks that were in the gold level, Al, they got 50 years of education to supposedly eliminate poverty by redistributing the wealth. Does that sound familiar?
Well, it's everybody wants to redistribute the wealth. I would like to have the wealth more redistributed so I got more of it. Everybody's in favor of redistributing. If I get more, I'm in favor of it. If I get less, if it's redistributed from me, I'm opposed. Redistributed to me, hooray.
Well, so, it goes on, actually. The idealistic society they wrote about actually needed to eliminate war. And to do that, what they did is hired mercenaries from nearby lands to go to war. And they were deliberately sent to dangerous situations so they could weed out the warlike populations and leave only the peaceable folks. Kind of makes you wonder about Blackwater, doesn't it?
It makes you wonder about all of it. If you're going to leave the peaceable folks and the people who aren't willing to fight, you're going to weed out everyone except those who are too apathetic or too weak to fight, and they can't do anything to resist unjust government.
Right.
I mean, there's a problem with having too many warriors, but there is also a problem with not having any. It's not an accident that the society has warriors.
Right. Well, down through the centuries, the socialists and the communists have actually adopted this notion of this imaginary society, and it's actually become their blueprint for ruling nations. It's often called the Great Utopian Socialist Movement. And what these leaders tended to do is promote an imaginary society where, you know, there's equal share of goods, citizens only do the work they enjoy, you know, more time to pursue leisure. And also in that plan is the total abolishment of currency. So obviously with that mindset, when you get people that come in here with other notions to develop commercialism and capitalism, that kind of throws a social wrench into the utopian plan, doesn't it?
Well, the whole thing is, you know, you can sell ideals to everyone, but the reality is that life is a struggle. And it's not just a struggle against Russia and Ukraine and whoever else you care to point out. It's a struggle to some degree against your neighbors. It's a struggle to some degree against your family. I mean, that's part of life. We have competing interests. My interests are not the same as everyone else's. And therefore, we have to learn to work together, even though it is our nature to be competitors.
That's true. Well, you know what? Our founding fathers, you know, had this whole idea of, you know, the republic. But, you know, it was suggested that there was this English political philosopher, James Harrington, who influenced, that we're told, the founding fathers with a book he wrote called The Commonwealth of Oceania. And the book was centered on the development of a republic America. And it also suggested, though, that some of the colonies could be experimental. Get this. The Carolinas in 1670, Pennsylvania in 1681, and Georgia in 1733, where they were proposing that they be planned as economic and social utopian societies, which the land was allocated equally instead of purchased or inherited. But for whatever reason, that never came to be. And but, you know, you really can't have a place. It's not very practical where, you know, you manufacture and maintain a land of idleness and luxury. That's just not going to work, is it?
No, it's not going to happen except in books. It's a fictional concept, and that if you don't eat, if you don't work, you don't eat. That is more the reality. We don't always follow that, but to the extent we stray from that idea, the nation comes to harm. Not just the people who don't work. They're headed for harm under any circumstances. But the nation itself says, some of us don't have to work. Nonsense. Everybody got to work to support yourself.
Well, I guess the closest...
Sad but true.
Yeah, you're right. And I think the closest we ever got to utopia may have been the Garden of Eden. The only difference is I know that existed, but man's utopia does not.
Well, that's, the people in Washington, D.C. might beg to differ. They've got a kind of utopia going on there, at least for the people that are in Congress and the government. They're trying to create a, you know, that's the problem. The reality, of course, is when they're promoting a utopia, they're promoting something that never has been and isn't going to be on this earth, at least not until the Messiah returns. In the meantime, every one of us are going to have to struggle one way or another to make it. And that means we're going to have to work, generally speaking, unless we want to just be thieves or politicians, maybe lawyers. You actually have to work for them.
Well, speaking of the Lord and the Bible, I like to go to the Supreme Authority to see what he says about man's idea of the great utopian socialist movement. And I think most people would agree that the utopian movement is really promoted usually by the liberal half of society. So what does God say about liberals? Well, he wrote about them. If you go to Isaiah chapter 32, verse 5, we read this: the vile person shall be no more called liberal, nor the churl said to be bountiful. So what the Lord's saying is the liberal mindset is vile because it's set against his ways. And the churl is a term used to describe a miser, a greedy, a brutish person, and that person's not going to be blessed. And if you go on down to verses 6 and 8, it says this: for the vile person, the liberal, will speak villainy in his heart and will work iniquity, to practice hypocrisy and to utter error against the Lord, to make enmity to the soul of the hungry, and will cause the drink of the thirsty to fail. But the liberal devises liberal things, and by liberal things they shall be judged. So it's clear, you know, God describes a liberal as a person who says one thing and does the opposite, is a hypocrite, and is against God's laws and causes greater poverty on the people. So you can see this old philosophy of the liberal utopian society is kind of opposite against what our Creator wants for us.
I think what the liberal means, in some regards, I mean, you could describe me as a liberal in some regards. I've run for public office as a conservative, but I'm liberal in the sense that liberal tradition means an expansion of the rights of individual men and women. And to that extent, yeah, I'm willing to go along with being liberal, provided that the expansion of rights doesn't come at the cost of whatever duties and obligations are imposed by the good Lord. It's
That's
a confusing
right. Rights
situation.
Come from God.
It's the most important ones do, absolutely. Yeah. The unalienable rights that's declared in our Declaration of Independence. No other nation has done this in 2,000 years. We declared that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. No right. other nation has done that. If you get your rights from God, that makes you an individual sovereign. And that was the great and extraordinary blessing that was placed on this nation at its inception. Government has worked mightily against it ever since. They do not want us as subjects. They don't want us as sovereigns. They want us as subjects, and they've used a number of different devices to remove us from the status where we could claim those God-given rights, one of which are drug laws, food laws, medical device laws that define us as animals. There are no God-given rights for animals. The government has done this intentionally to strip us of those God-given unalienable rights.
Right, and you're right. And basically, privileges, they have usurped rights to replace them with privileges, which they can control and revoke. See, that's the problem. That's the real problem. But you know what? Here's the good news. We are witnessing a revival in using natural therapies all over the world, because folks are saying they need whole food supplements and a chiropractor rather than they need a general practitioner. So a lot of people are, you know, taking that obligation to maintain their health. Without toxic drugs is more serious matter than ever before. So I applaud folks out there. So if they want to avoid, the basics are, you know, cleanse and nourish the system, and you can sidestep a whole lot of problems. So avoid those processed foods, folks. Cleanse and nourish the body with some organ cleansing. We have some herbal organ cleanses at the powerherbs.com website. So if anybody out there wants to start their semi-annual cleansing, nothing better, no better time than the spring. Al, do you do any cleansing, Al?
I've been known to bathe up to once a week, whether I need it or not. Is that the type of cleansing you're talking about?
I'm talking about organ cleansing.
Saturday for sure. Well, probably, usually. I won't say for sure, but usually.
Okay.
Is that the kind of cleansing you're talking about?
No, we're talking about some, you know, removing more toxins over 2,000.
I've tried it on one occasion, and in fact, I probably do it again here in the near future. I think it's a good idea. But
yeah, you have the power to remove over 2,000 pharmaceutical residues and radioactive particles and heavy metals and any of those preservatives that they're all in the foods today. You have the ability to pull those out of the system.
And that's a product that you have at.
Well, we have the cleanses, the system, five system organ cleanses, and they're real easy to do, and they're not going to break the bank. So, I mean, it's going
to
extend longevity.
Give us some contact information, because it's time for us
to go. Okay, they go to the powerherbs.com website, thepowerherbs.com, or call us toll-free at 866-229-3776. 3663-866-229-3663. And happy spring to you, Al. Melody, we'll talk with you next week.
And we'll see you in Utopia, Wendy. Talk to you next week. Thank you. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
You wanted to finish up with Ukraine, and what's interesting today, Al, Russia imposed sanctions on 9 U.S. officials and lawmakers today. And some of them, Harry Reid, Robert Mendez, John McCain, Dan Coats were some of the ones that are barred from Russia. It was also John Boehner was also on the list. I don't have the complete 9 folks that they have listed on there.
The Gang of Nine.
The
huh?
Gang of Nine.
Yeah. It just gets absurd. You know, it's like little kids. It's like trying to settle a conflict between children. They're supposed to be diplomats somewhere around here. They're supposed to be wise people.
There's also a
prudent
bank.
People.
There was also a bank that was included in the sanctions.
But it wasn't J.P. Morgan Chase, was it?
I'll have to see if I can actually find the list. This just popped up on my notifications. This was actually from Reuters, so I'll have to see if the AP shows the the actual list. Let's see.
There's an article from the Voice of Russia, all right, Russian newspaper. And the headline is, Kiev's threat to confiscate Gazprom property will lead to chain reaction from which Ukraine will not benefit. And that's according to Russian foreign minister Sergei Lavrov. All right. And he sees more. He says, I think it is in no one's interest to begin this battle. Property of Gazprom is not state property, as with other business entities of ours. And this initiative of Ukraine could lead to quite a complex chain reaction from which I suppose Ukraine will not benefit. And this again, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. And what he's talking about, Kiev, the government of Kiev, which is Kiev, capital of Ukraine, is threatening to confiscate Gazprom property. Gazprom is the Russian petroleum manufacturer, a huge producer and distributor of petroleum products, and apparently the Ukraine is threatening to attack or seize the pipelines that are currently owned by Gazprom that are crossing Ukrainian land. Now the Russian foreign minister says there can be a complex chain reaction here, and he's exactly right. Now it's beginning to get interesting. Because while the European Union, the United Kingdom, Great Britain, of course, and the United States do little or nothing to sanction Russia for annexing the Crimea, the little Ukraine is threatening to impose economic consequences that have some teeth. But the result could be a shooting conflict no one really wants. And look at it, Ukrainians are saying, we're going to take your pipelines. Well, that's what this whole thing is about to some degree. They ought to think twice, because if they do, you can bet the Russians are going to invade. In Russia, they might be able to bribe individual leaders of the Ukraine or bribe the Ukrainian government itself to abandon resistance to the annexation of the Crimea. Fools may ultimately prevail, and we could see some sort of shooting war between Russia and the Ukraine. But if we do, we can expect Ukraine not only to lose the Crimea, which, as most of you understand, is almost like an island south of Russia and Ukraine. They may not only lose the Crimea, but they may wind up losing eastern Ukraine to Russia also. If a shooting war begins, you can bet Russia is going to invade the Ukraine. And they may not settle for just the Crimea. They may take more. So if the Ukraine wants to push this, and by destroying Russian pipelines, they may make more trouble for themselves than they already have. For example, if they cut these pipelines or interfere with the pipelines that are supplying natural gas or petroleum products from Russia to Europe, they will not only deprive Russia of income, they will also deprive Europe of natural gas that they absolutely need. Again, about 25% of their natural gas comes from Russia. And the result is that Europe could theoretically find itself aligned with Russia in trying to stop the Ukraine from interfering with the supply of crude oil. Under those circumstances, all of a sudden the Ukraine finds itself not only fighting Russia on their east, but maybe fighting Europe on their west. And the point I'm trying to make is Ukraine is caught in a situation where they're darned if they do and darned if they don't. They can't cut that pipeline and say, oh, we'll fix the Russians. No, you're going to fix the Europeans too. And what can the United States government do about this situation? And the answer is not simply not much, but they can't even act in secret. You know, we can imagine that the United States government might get involved and send over special forces or bribe local dissidents to blow up the pipeline. All right, we could imagine that. wouldn't be surprising on one level. Wouldn't be the first time the government's been involved with sending secret operatives or buying secret operatives to accomplish certain results in foreign countries. But would we dare do that? Even if we could, would we dare do that? Because you blow up the pipeline, and who's going to be angry? Not only Russia. They're not going to get paid. They can't sell their natural gas if the pipeline gets blown up. They're not going to get paid. That's going to make Russia mad, but it's going to make Europe mad. And even if we try to do this on the sly, if we tried to do this in secret, it would eventually come out. There are no secrets in the digital age. Right? You can bet it would be revealed by someone like Edward Snowden in a reasonably short period of time, and then what? Then Europe discovers that it has more in common with Russia than it does with the United States. We not only lose ability to influence Russia and Ukraine, we lose ability to influence Europe. So what I'm trying to go to, where I'm going with this, is that there's not much we can do. And we not openly, not secretly, and we should have sense enough to just recognize that, as I've been saying for the last 10 days or so. Just recognize it, leave it alone. It's not our problem. You know, there are four principal actors in this drama. And one of them is Russia. And the next one is the Crimea. And those two are united. Russia wants the Crimea. Crimea wants Russia. They're united. We've got the Ukraine. They say, no, we've taken the land that we got from Russia 60 years ago. You can't return that to Russia. And there's also Europe. Europe is involved in this because they get much of their natural gas from Russia. Now, all the Ukraine can do is interfere with the distribution of that natural gas. And if it does, Russia and the Crimea are united against the Ukraine. And if they interfere with the distribution of natural gas going to the European Union will be united with Russia and Crimea against the Ukraine. The Ukraine has nowhere to turn on this. They are being caught between a hard place of economic necessity and another rock, which is the United States, which can't afford to get involved in a war. We promised them by treaty that we'd defend them against Russia, and we're just having to say, nope, sorry, we can't do that. We can't afford that anymore. And this is being recognized. There's an article from the Washington Examiner that says, and the headline is, Obama, no U.S. military action in Ukraine. President Obama ruled out military action against Russia over its seizure of Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula in an interview on Wednesday. We are not going to be getting into a military excursion in the Ukraine, Obama told San Diego NBC affiliate KNSD. What we're going to do is make sure that we've got a strong international coalition that sends a clear message. Oh, bunk. We're not going to get involved militarily. Praise the Lord. Somebody has got brains enough to not get their snoot so deep into the affairs of Russia and the Ukraine that we wind up with a war. All right? Somebody's got some brains. I don't know if it's Obama or who, but somebody's got brains enough to stay out of this. And then we've got another headline. Someone's got brains enough in the United States. If we're not going to get involved militarily, we're not going to be involved. All we're going to do is talk about it. There'll be some rhetoric. We will sanction the Ukrainians by not letting them go to Disney World. They don't get to go to Disney World this year. They'll be really sorry. Handful, 11 of them we talked about. Ukrainians and Russians won't be able to get to Disney World this year. I'm sure that'll make a big difference. And now the Russians are sanctioning a dozen or however many Americans. They won't be able to visit the Bolshoi. All right? A dozen Ukrainians and Russians can't go to Disney World, and a dozen Americans can't go to the Bolshoi Ballet this year. And that will be the extent of the economic reprisals. But good thing. Good thing people talk about World War III and the rest of that. No, no, no. Let's just leave it alone. We don't have business there. Again, this is between Russia, Crimea, Ukraine, and Europe, the European Union. We don't have a dog in this fight. Stay out of it. Here's the last headline. New York Times, Ukraine plans to withdraw troops from Russia-occupied Crimea. Bowing to reality of the Russian military occupation of Crimea a day after Russia announced it was annexing the disputed peninsula, the Ukrainian government said on Wednesday that it had drawn up plans to evacuate all of its military personnel and their families and was prepared to relocate as many as 25,000 of them to mainland Ukraine. Goes on and says thousands of Ukrainian soldiers and sailors have been trapped on bases and other installations in the Crimea for more than 2 weeks, surrounded by heavily armed Russian forces and loosely organized local militia. While the provisional government in Kiev has insisted that Russia's annexation of Crimea is illegal and has appealed for international supporters to help, the evacuation announcement by the head of the National Security Council, Andriy Poruby, effectively amounted to a surrender of Crimea, at least from a military standpoint. So, calmer heads, wiser heads are prevailing here, at least for the moment, and it looks like this thing is over. Obama's not going to war. It means there's not going to be a third world war. The Ukrainians are bailing out of the Crimea. That means they've surrendered militarily. How else? What else is there? We're waiting for them to surrender diplomatically. Nobody cares. This deal is now effectively over, although there's still opportunity for some hotheads to do something stupid like blow up the pipeline. There may be some crazies in the Ukraine, not necessarily the government, but people in the Ukraine. They're angry about it and feel themselves to be patriots, and therefore they go bomb the pipeline, which is going to be very difficult to defend. Well, if they do that, then this thing may amp up, and hard to say where it'll go from there, but this is all over. This is, you know, I was a little premature. When we first started talking about it, I said it'd be forgotten within 2 weeks. It looks like it's going to be pretty much over in 2 weeks and probably won't be forgotten for a month, so I was... My predictions were inaccurate in terms of time, but other than that, this is, you know, it's only, you can only be so stupid. The world will not, even politicians, there's a limit to their stupidity. You understand that? It's hard to believe at times, but even they have a certain amount of common sense. And when it's explained to them, they finally say, you know, this is stupid. Maybe we shouldn't do it, especially if we're not getting paid. If there's no money in it, why do something that's completely stupid? So, what do you think, Melody? Anybody going to do anything crazy and amp this situation up, or is it over?
Well, you know, there's discussions out there as who really started this whole thing, as far mm-hmm. as, you know, the demonstrations and edging them to come in and take control of the demonstrators and so forth. So, you know, there's so much.
There are suspicions that the United States fomented
Absolutely.
The problem in the Ukraine to begin with.
Yes.
And then the Russians reacted to it, and then the United States, oh, you nasty Russians, I don't know who the bad guys are, but...
And certainly in a lot of the other hot spots, there's been rumors that the U.S. was behind, you know, a lot of the beginnings of the turmoil or the disruption in government and the handover of and the elimination of these heads of states going into these countries. So it reminds me of the big guy wanting to start a fight. You know how you kind of just push and you shove and, you know, you might push on one and then you go to the next one. It's like edging for a fight. But yet nothing actually happens yet.
Yeah.
But I do believe a fight is coming.
Not right here, though.
But not here.
Not at here. Ukraine. This may this may make people angry at each other, meaning the United States and Russia. They may, their anger at each other may increase. They may be more prone to fight at some other location.
And you might have the bully edging a fight, wanting to create a fight. But, you know, the person that he's trying to get into a fight with might be just a little bit smarter and do something that could backfire. So it is interesting. What's the next hot spot? You know we're going to have one. What's the next hot spot?
I don't know. Maybe Florida or the coast.
You think so?
Yeah, maybe New Mexico. New Mexico, we've got our own invasions going on in parts of our country. The Russians may help to invade. Who knows?
But, no, I'm sure there will be another hot spot after Ukraine and how it starts and how it ends. That's what keeps things interesting.
They certainly do. We're going to take a break for some interesting commercials. We'll be right back. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis back on Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. The program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. And here's an article from the Washington Times. It's one of those things. It just gives you evidence of what's really going on in this country. And it makes you groan and wince and, I don't know, even smile a little bit at times. It's not smiling, and it's not a merry laughter. It's like, oh, my gosh, look what they're doing now. The headline is, New PAC offers private access to Virginia Governor McAuliffe for as little as $50,000. Melody, you got an extra 50 grand?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, if you do, then you too can attend a private evening reception with Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, who wasted little time after Virginia's General Assembly session graveled to a close to launch a political action committee that offers such meetings with the governor in exchange for high-end donations. See, these aren't bribes, Melody. You give the governor $50,000 and you can talk to him. But it's not a bribe. See, this is a donation. Okay?
Do you think we could charge people to talk to us?
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea.
Hey,
we should set up a 900 number for people who want to call. I don't know.
We're a lot less than 50,000.
I don't know if we could get 50,000, but we could set up a 900 number for them to call in on.
$999.
I mean, they have those things. They had some of those 900 numbers where they're charging people $100 for a couple minutes on the phone. I think we.
But you have to be female.
Well, I don't know if you do or you don't. Pauloff's not a female, and he's getting $50,000. I don't, you know, such arrangements here, according to the Washington Times, such arrangements were commonplace, and the practice of Virginia governors creating their own fundraising PACs dates back 20 years. But the move was made after a legislative session in which reducing the influence of money in politics was one of the top priorities for a governor who drew up plans to rent out the Lincoln bedroom during the Clinton administration. In other words, McAuliffe was part of the Clinton administration. While they were there, they had ideas that in order to make money, they would rent out the Lincoln bedroom in the White House. And you go, I don't know, they could put a little, you know, put a most hell sign outside the White House. And we're always open, you know, for that special romantic rendezvous. And you can just drive in and park and go up there and use the Lincoln bedroom. It'd be kind of like a Motel 6, but it would be the Lincoln bedroom, and you'd have to pay a little more than Motel 6. It's not uncommon to have that kind of arrangement, said Brad Smith, chairman of the Federal Election Commission, during the George W. Bush administration. Virginia is certainly unusual because there are no campaign finance limits. A lot of people are going to feel a little uncomfortable with that. And it's a problem I harp on occasionally, periodically, but more than once on this program. And it's political campaign contribution laws. They're helping to destroy this country. I can remember when it used to cost $1,000 a night to rent a high-class prostitute. And that was back when I was a young man. I never had the money to do it, and I never did it. But they were talking about, ooh, $1,000 a night. It was sort of thing. How can you imagine somebody getting $1,000 a night? Here we are. Times have changed since then. Now it costs $50,000 to rent a high-class prostitute, and you probably won't even need a condom. Right? This is a political prostitute again. Political campaign contribution laws are destroying this country. By allowing our politicians to take more money, as bribes, but under the guise of political campaign contributions and donations, we've allowed our politicians to become open and overt treasonous whores who are for sale to the highest bidder in the cat house on the Potomac as well as in the state cat houses across the country. They are prostituting themselves because it's legal for them to do so. And the reason it's legal is because they passed laws that say it's legal. And it goes to the heart of much of the trouble we have with our government today. It's part of the reason that our legislators don't read the laws. What's the point of reading them? They don't write them. They don't legislate. We elect people to Congress and the Senate to be legislators. That means we elect them to write laws. They don't write laws. They take laws that other people have written and they broker them. They do not legislate. They broker. If the money's right, you can get virtually any law you want enacted in this Congress. Now, that's an exaggeration. You can't get absolutely anything. But the limits on what can be enacted into law continues to expand. And the limits are going further and further out. And they can do virtually anything they want, and they will if the money's right. It's not about what's right for the American people. It's about what's right for special interests who have enough money in the first place to bribe politicians to pass laws that will allow them to take even more money from the upper middle class, the middle class, and the poor. That's what this is about. They get them passed. They have big corporations say, pass this law and make it legal for us to steal more money from the American people. And we wind up paying those additional bills. We might wind up being deprived of a fair wage for our efforts. We wind up being deprived of fair access to credit. We wind up with a number of deprivations. And it works real well for the top 1 or 2% of this country who have enough money to bribe Congress. But for those of us who can't afford to bribe Congress, it's not working well at all. You know, I think a lot of what, if I were in a position to actually do something about this, I'd say this. If you are making enough money where you can afford to hire lobbyists to go hustle congressmen and senators in Washington, you're making too much money. You need to have your taxes increased. If it was up to me, I'd look for those lobbyists. I'd look for the industries and the businesses and say, okay, you guys think you're big? Think you got all these lobbyists? You can afford the lobbyists? You can afford higher taxes. I would make that, you know, if you got one, you're getting the other one. And if we can get these lobbyists out, and there was no one to privately write these bills that are being enacted by government, then Congress would actually have to write the laws, and they'd actually have to pay attention. It would take them longer to write. It takes a lot of time to write a law. How many man hours do you suppose went into Obamacare, which is thousands of pages? How many hours do you think went into that?
It was borrowed from London. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's all right. You know, if Congress were forced and the Senate were actually forced to write their own laws, okay, not buy them, not just take them from the wealthy and say, okay, yeah, if you got the money, we'll broker them for you. If they actually had to write them, one of the effects would be a lot less laws. Congress can't write as many laws as they are called on to broker. And if they had to write laws, well, we'd have less laws in this country. You might even have sensible laws. And if Congress could not accept bribes under the guise of political campaign contributions, if they couldn't accept fat bribes from rich cats, guess what? If they wanted to get reelected, they'd have to be reelected based on what they did for their constituency in their district. They'd actually have to represent the people who elected them rather than the people who bribed them. Which, to my mind, sounds like a good idea.
But you're right. Look at Christie in New Jersey. That state is being devastated for the citizens. But yet the wealthy there, they're doing just fine.
Yeah.
And yet look how they parade him around like he's this, you know, this great person.
Yeah.
And he's destroying that state.
Mm-hmm.
They have the worst crime, the unemployment of the nation. And yet he's being paraded around as the next presidential Republican nominee. It's like,
well, if you've got enough money, you can afford to create that image and that illusion. And this goes to there's another side to this coin. It's not just a question of having enough money to bribe Congress. It's also having enough money to pay for advertising in major newspapers and news outlets.
Well, certainly they
which makes them now inclined to do what the advertisers want them to do and write what the advertisers want them to write. And so the people hear from the major news media what the rich want them to hear, and the people hear from the Congress what the rich want them to hear, and the people wind up caught and exploited and perhaps angry, some of them. And ultimately, I don't know where it ends, but it can't be a good ending. It's a bad situation. And we've allowed this to take place partly because this goes to the idea of having only a handful of major newspapers in this country. We were better off having 100 small newspapers than we're having 5 major newspapers. And the reason for that is 1 to 10 of those 100 can take a more objective approach to reporting the news. The super rich can't put ads in all the newspapers. They can't buy all of them. They can buy the big ones. They can't get to all the small ones. That means there's at least hope from those small operations that we might get a dose of the truth rather than a dose of whatever the advertisers want us to hear. So it's up to all of us to recognize these influences and recognize how we're being influenced in part by political campaign laws that allow politicians to take bribes, and in part by advertising practices that are the result of centralization of major news outlets. And you have to be careful. You have to try to find out, what do you think the truth is? Try to find what the truth is. Try to find people who will report the truth as near as they're able to understand it. And then you have to filter it through your own common sense and your own experience and say, you know, I think I heard some truth today. I think these people are trying to tell the truth. Or use your own common sense, and in some instances you'll sit back and say, no, I think these people are, I don't think that's true. But it's incumbent on all of us to become more objective and not simply believe what we're told. Too many people are being hustled and conned and deceived by major mechanisms that affect our political system and our news system. And if you want to avoid the kinds of problems, the kinds of exploitation that are inherent in this manipulation and control, they're not lying to you in order to do you a good, in order to do you a service. They're not lying to the American people in order to educate or make a utopia of the sort Wendy was talking about earlier in the program. They're lying to make you passive and apathetic and ignorant and unable to defend your own best interests. They're lying in order to take something you've got and keep it for them. What do you think, Melody?
Well, that's just the way it works, Al.
No, no, it's not news. Hmm. It's been that way. It's been that way for as long as anyone here has been alive, and it's probably been that way for centuries.
Absolutely.
But you got to recognize it. It's part of life, all right? We may not be able to stop it, but it does need to be recognized. If you want to keep this country as it once was, it's incumbent on all of us to recognize those realities and, you know, filter for them, recognize them, and minimize their effect. Make sure that you're not busted by them, hurt by them, exploited by them. And there's nothing wrong with working for your own self-interest. It's wrong to try to exploit other people, but it's not wrong to work for your best interests. And there's a strange line. Where is the line between the two? And the line is, when I start demanding more than I've earned, that's when I'm doing something wrong. We are each entitled. If you're earning $100,000, you're entitled to $100,000. If you're earning $250,000, you're entitled to $250,000. If you're earning $5 billion, you're entitled to $5 billion. But if you're acquiring the $5 billion or the $250,000 or the $100,000, if you're getting that by means of hustling other people, exploiting them, then you're not worth it. And it's something very difficult, easy to say. Hard to find that line. You know, I can tell you there's a line there someplace, but where is it? It's very difficult to point it out. We'll have to look for it another day because...
Is it a red line?
Yeah, it's probably... It was. They were red lines until Obama stole all the red paint, and now we have to have green lines or blue lines because we can't find any more red paint for making red lines in the sand. But we will look for more red paint during the evening and try to have it for you tomorrow when we return on Financial Survival. Hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye.
I work all night. I work all day. If